Following on Ein Hayyim and Aleph, the first line of the wide line, we learned the Mishnah had talked about, so you have a Gemara. The Mishnah had talked about the various cases where a man is the Kaddish, a woman, thinking that she, not knowing that she has outstanding Nedarim, or not knowing that she has outstanding Mumim, and then it turns out that she does, and what happens, the consequences because of that, whether the Kaddish or Chal, whether if it's Mekadesh or Stam, and then Kana Stam, whether that's reason enough for divorcing her without a Ksuba, etc. And the Mishnah had finished off that the Mishnah had given a general rule, what's considered a mum by a woman. The Mishnah had said, Kol mum and shepoisin, any mum that passes a Kohen from doing the Avodah, also passels a woman in the sense that it's ground for the husband to be able to cancel the Kiddushin or to be able to divorce her without a Ksuba, as the case may be. Well, it's a Tana. We learn in a Braisa. Hosifu alehen, the Chachamim added those three more that are besides the list that's in Bechoris. There's two lists in Masechta Bechoris. One list of mumim that apply to animals and also for korbanos and also to kohenim, and one that's specific to human beings. A total, I think, of 70 odd mumim. So they added three more. Hosifu alehen zeya, where the person is very sweaty. The shuma, or they have a shuma, usually, Rashi over here translates shuma as a wart. Usually the translation of shuma is more like a mole. Whatever it is, some kind of skin growth. The reyach hapeh, and bad breath. So even though those would not passel a kohen from doing those, they have avodah, but they do passel a woman, those are grounds for the husband to be able to say that the kedushin are not chal, etc. You're telling me that these three things don't passel a kohen? We learn among the mumim that passel an animal, hazokin, if the animal is old, the Gemara explains they're so old that when it stands, it shakes. It can't stand unaided. V'achoyle, if it's sick, same idea. V'hamazuham, and if it's smelly. Now, we don't just mean smelly, by the way, you go to the average barnyard, the animals smell, but we're not talking about that. So that you can clean up. We're talking about it's smelly as in, like it has permanent body odor. Utnan, and then we learn in the Mishnah, Mumin Eilub and Kvurin Ben Ovin Psulat Ba'adam. All these Mumim, whether they're permanent or whether they're temporary, all passel a person as well. The Gemara right now is assuming that Mizuham and Zeya are effectively the same thing. What's the problem of a Kohen or a woman sweating a lot? The problem is the body odor. So in that case, it's the same thing. The answer is Amar Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina Loi Kasha, Kan Bezeya Everes, Kan Bezeya She'eno Everes. One is talking about where it's they're only sweaty sometimes, and the other one where it's everes, where it goes away, one where it's not. Tosfos explains what we mean by everes is you can take a bath and then the smell goes away for a while. So the vort is therefore that when it comes to a kohen, zeya everes doesn't passel, because fine, you take a bath, you go do the avodah, an hour, two hours after your bath, you'll be smelly again. Okay, that's long enough for you to do the avodah. Whereas with a husband and wife, you can't do that. You can't expect her to be bathing several times a day. And she's going to be around her husband all the time. So therefore, zeya she'eino everes, if it never goes away, then it passels even a kohen. That's what we mean when we say hamazuham. Rav Ashi says, Bechlal, you're assuming that Zeya, that sweat, and Mezuham, smelly, are the same thing. It's not. Zeya, Mezuham, Karamis. How are you, Bechlal, thinking that there's a comparison between being very sweaty and being smelly? Hasam gabe koyanim efshal la'avra b'kiyur d'chamra. When it comes to koyanim, yes, let's say, for example, that we're talking about that the difference is, in other words, that Rav Ashi is saying like this. There are two actual things. One is where the person has bad body odor. That, yes, would pass on a kohen as well. That's what we mean by mezuham. When we talk about, when we say over here zeya, we just mean the person sweats an extra lot. The kind of thing where, like, you know, you see sometimes where, like, a person walks around with sweat stains under their armpits kind of thing because they sweat excessively. That kind of thing doesn't necessarily pass on a kohen because hasam gabe kohenim efshal abru v'kiyur d'chamra, because when it comes to a kohen, he can get rid of it, temporarily at least, by rubbing it with vinegar. Umereya hapenami, and similarly as far as bad breath, if a kohen has bad breath, efshadinok et pilpul of a pomeva of a davoida. He may still have the bad breath, but he can put a piece of pepper in his mouth, peppercorn in his mouth, which helps kill the smell, and then do the avoida. Again, the first answer we had was we're talking about a temporary thing. They're able to bathe for a while and then they stop smelling, or they're able to brush their teeth and for a while their breath stops smelling and then it starts up again. Here we're saying something different. Even let's say you take a bath and you smell just as much as before. Well, then in that case you'll be possible. What is it though? If the problem is only because you sweat too much, fine. Rub your skin with vinegar. The problem is you have bad breath. Put some pepper in your mouth, and then do the avodah. Avagabi ishala epsha. When it comes to a woman, you can't do that. Again, she's around her husband. She's around her husband all the time. She can't be expected to be putting. The husband can't reasonably expect that his wife is always going to be able to put pepper in her mouth or always be able to rub herself with vinegar. So that's the difference.
Even today, that would be the case.
Well, today if a person has bad body odor or bad breath, usually they would be able to find the underlying cause. It's a fungal infection, it's a whatever, and then treat the underlying cause. In those times, they didn't have that.
Yeah.
This is also true, right? Yeah.
What happened? You didn't notice that before when he went on?
That we're going to talk about in the next Mishnah. We're first of all, remember, it wasn't always the first date. Kedushin could be done by proxy, remember? But yeah, we're going to talk about in the next Mishnah and the Gemara on it. We're going to talk about the difference between mumim that he may have known about in advance versus mumim that he didn't know about in advance.
What about lavra b'kiva d'chamra? Is this a kohenim? Are they drinking wine? No.
Pure d'chamra. Pure means sharpness of d'chamra of wine, meaning vinegar. Pure d'chamra means vinegar. D'chamra means wine. Pure d'chamra means b'yayin keha. Yayin keha with sour wine, agrabalaz, vinegar. Yeah. No, it's not that he's drinking wine. He's taking vinegar and using it to rub on his skin.
Yayin keha is
vinegar, yeah. Okay, so that takes care of the zeya of the zeya and rei chaper issue. Come sit with us over here. None of us have too much zeya. None of us have too much rei chaper. You can sit near us and not. Yeah. Okay. Next. Hai shuma hechidamya. Next, let's talk about. We said there were three things they added: zeya, shuma, and rei chaper. So again, shuma is either actually translated as a wart, verua is a French word for a wart, or usually a shuma means something more like a mole. Hai shuma hechidamya. What kind of wart or mole are we talking about over here? Id ispa seir, if there's hair on it. And it passes a koyin as well. What are we saying? They added it that it applies to a woman but not to a koyin. And if it doesn't have hair in it, then it should depend. If it's a large wart, then it would pass anyway, even by a koyin. And if it's a small wart, then it wouldn't pass a woman either. A normal man doesn't care if his wife has a small wart on her body. He would only care about a big one. So what kind of case? Are we talking about a koyin, it wouldn't be considered a mum, but a woman it would. The Tanya, because we learned a Braita, Shuma Shiyesh Baseya Harez Mum, a wart that has hair in it is considered a mum. Ein Baseya, if there's no hair in it, Gdoila Harez Mum, Ktana Ein Mum. So if it's large, it's still considered a mum. If it's small, it's not considered a mum. Veizri Gdoila, what's considered a large wart, Pirishim Shimgam, no Adke Isser Haitalki. If it's the size of an Isser Haitalki, an Isser Haitalki is a coin they use in those days, it's about the size of a quarter, a little bit larger. So if it's that size, even if there's no hair in it, that's enough to be significant. Less than that is not. Okay, so where do you have a case, again, where it passels a woman but doesn't passel a kind? The answer is, Amar Medes al Padachta. The case is, suppose that this wart is on her forehead. Question is, so what's the problem? Padachta rov and ifayasu. Knew, if it's on her forehead, obviously, like you said, he was going out with her. He knew that she has a wart on her forehead. He obviously didn't mind. How all of a sudden now does he have a claim that I can't stand it? The answer is, Amar Papa by Medes al Tachas Kippa Shal Roisha. Because it's high enough up on her forehead that it's under her cap, under her tichel. The zimnin de mischazia, the zimnin de loy mischazia. So sometimes it's noticeable, sometimes not. So not necessarily. When he was going out with her, he may not have noticed it. She was wearing, and apparently the idea is, even though women who are, according to many poskim, and this is the generally accepted halacha, unmarried women don't have to cover their hair. Only married women do, as we learned the other day. Apparently it was common in those days that even unmarried women tended to wear some kind of cap or tichel or something. So you can have, if the thing is right here by her hairline, so you may, sometimes it may be covered, sometimes not. She may have to wear her kippah a little lower than normal, yeah. Could also be.
Didn't his sisters check it out in the bathhouse?
The next Mishnah. Omer of Chista. The following thing that we're going to say now, I heard from a great person, Umanu Rav Shila, namely that is Rav Shila, Nosh HaKelev, if the woman was bitten by a dog at some point, Venasa Mekoymet Salekes, and now there's a scar there, Hareza Mum, then that's also considered a Mum. Omer Rav Chista, Kel Ova B'Isha Hareza Mum, here's another din, if the woman has a very deep voice, a more masculine sounding voice, then that's also considered a mum. Shanema, as the pasuk says, ki koylech orev and sheashirim, ki koylech orev umarech nave. Your voice is sweet and your appearance is beautiful. So okay, the whole sheashirim is a marshal, it's all meant as a marshal of the relationship between the Jewish people and the Eved, but still, the pashtus of the pasuk is that it shows that there's a connection between a woman's looks and her voice. So the same way as the looks have to meet a certain standard, so does the voice. This is, by the way, also from that pasuk is also where we learn the concept of Kol B'Isha Era, since the pasuk is comparing the two of them, that the appearance of the woman and her voice. That's where we learn the concept that Kol is an attractive thing.
Even if it was a deep voice.
Well, in this case, where it's a deep voice, they were saying that's considered a mum.
Deep voice is
not.
No, no, so maybe it's not considered. But okay, I don't know. Maybe. That's a whole different issue. We'll learn that in Kiddushin, Beis Hashem, when the Gemara mentions Kol B'Isha Era, but not necessarily in context of singing. We'll talk about it then. We may talk about it at some point before that. But yeah, generally speaking, we assume that Kol B'Isha Era usually means singing, but it's actually not so simple. We'll get to it another time, Beis Hashem. Tani Rav Nosson Bira. Rav Nosson Bira, Torah of Brai, says as follows, Ben Dade Isha Tefach, a tefach between a woman's breasts. So Rav Acha Brei D'Rava, learning in the yeshiva in front of Rav Ashi, thought to say that means tefach l'bal yosa. What Rav Nosson Bira probably means is that a tefach is the proper amount. That should be the right amount of space there. Omer Ravashi, Ravashi tells him no, Gavim Mumin Tanya. That Braisa was actually part of a series that talks about Mumin.
What else would we be discussing if it was not Mumin?
No, because Chakert, it could mean that it's a good thing if she has a tefach between her breasts.
What's the point? Are they sitting around discussing?
Yeah, because we'd be so okay, so Maharam Shif explains that the relevance of it, and also the next thing that's going to talk about Sholosh Etzbayos instead, the relevance of it might be discusses what if there was a tnai made in Kiddushin, not just that she doesn't have Mumin, like the case we're talking about over here. Okay. What if there was a tnai in Kiddushin that she actually be, you know, exceptionally beautiful? Okay. So what would be considered exceptionally beautiful? That sort of thing. Okay. So Rav Ashi tells him, no, Gavim Mumin, Tanya. Actually, that shear of a tefach is taught as an example of one of the Mumin. V'kama, so what is the proper amount? Amar Abaye, Sholosh Etzbayos. The right amount is that there should be three Etzbayos between them. Three Etzbayos between, yeah.
So
we're talking Etzbayos, thumbs usually, yeah. Okay. But that's considered the normal amount, I don't know. Okay. Yeah. Tanya, Rav Nosson Omer. Four Etzbayos make a tefach. Tanir of Nosanim, Kol Isha Shadadea Gasin Michel Havrise, if a woman's breasts are larger than most other women, Hareza Mum, then it's also considered a Mum. But Kama Amra Biasha Bredir of Levi, Mishmedir of Yashav and Levi, Tefach. If there are Tefach or more larger than normal, and we're going to see based on the next line of the Gemara, we don't mean larger as in like a larger cup size or whatever, like they talk about it nowadays. We mean larger as in they hang down more than the average. Have you ever heard of such a thing where they're so much larger, they hang down so much more? The answer is ain't. Yes. The Amar Rav Baba Chana, Anira Isi Arya Achas, I saw a certain Arab woman, Sheif Shila Dadel Achareh, she threw her breasts behind her back, over her back, Vahinikas, and nursed her son. So yes, we see they hung down a lot, you know, like anybody who grew up ever seeing National Geographic knows these pictures they have of these primitive tribes, yes. So what's the, I saw a vort on this in a sefer called, I think, Big Day Yesha. He says, so what on earth, why would the Gemara even be telling us such a thing that a tefach larger than normal, why if it would that be considered a mum? And what's Rabbi Baba Kama telling us? He saw such an unsneistic thing that a woman's breast and sees her throwing over his back. He says like this. The Gemara mentions in Brachas that if you think about it, most mammals that nurse their young, their breasts or udders or whatever you want to call them are lower down on their body. Only a woman's are high up on the chest. why the Gemara says the special chesed of the Eibishter. She also adopted Mamakim Bina. The Eibishter made that a woman's breasts are in the place of Bina near the heart. And the Gemara gives two reasons over there. One is that the child shouldn't have to be Mamakim Bina. Dadim Mamakim Bina, yeah. The Bina is in the heart. But Lev Mavin, yeah. But the Gemara explains two advantages of it. Number one, the baby doesn't have to look at the area of the erva when he's nursing. He's looking at higher up on a more human part of the body. And number two, that he doesn't have to nurse from makom atinoyves, from like a more disgusting area of the body, like. So the vart is, therefore, this is the sefer wants to say, that when they hang down more than the average, they're much closer to the makom atinoyves. Yes, that's a mum. The baby is going to end up nursing from further down, closer to makom atinoyves. That's why we're calling it a mum. And that's what Rabbi Baba Hanna points out. Even the Arabs, even the Goyim understood this concept. So when there was this woman who had much larger dadim than normal, she didn't want that she's going to be carrying her baby and he's going to be nursing close to the makom atinoyves. She'd rather fling it over her back and let him sit on her back and nurse. He always has all the weird stories. Yeah, it's true. Okay. Okay. Right, so that's it. Okay. Since we mentioned something that Rabbi Miyasha, the grandson of Rabbi Shurban Levi, said in the name of Rabbi Shurban Levi, this din about Toli Shadadar Gassin, so Gemara brings another word from him. The Pasuk says, we say it before benching, Ulatzion Ye'omar Ishvi Ishu Ladbo, that Tzion will be said, a man and a man is born in it, and Hashem, the Most High, will establish it. What does that mean? What's the Ishvi Ish? It means whether you have a person who was born in Sinai in Yerushalayim or a person who looks forward to rebuilding of Yerushalayim. Both of them are considered children of Yerushalayim, and Rashi explains, the point is, the Pasuk is talking about La'asid Lavoi, how, as we say in the Torah of Shabbos or Chodesh, the Goyim will bring all the Jews to Eretz Yisrael. So whether it's somebody who actually was born in Eretz Yisrael and then went into Galus, or somebody who was born in Galus but always looked forward to being in Eretz Yisrael, both of them are considered children of Tzion. Ish v'ish yulad bab.
Those who don't.
That when Mashiach comes, they'll want to. The
Goyim will bring them.
Yeah. That's a different part, actually. That's one Chassidish Rebbe once said, there's a story in Sefer Chassidim about that there'll be people that even the Goyim have to bring them, that they themselves won't want to come, but they're still considered a present to the Eibishter. Yeah. They tell a story involving Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, the Rav of Yerushalayim about 80 or 90 years ago, that during the years when the British ruled over Eretz Yisrael, at one point they instituted quotas. You can't. Only a certain number of people every year are allowed to immigrate. Only a certain number of Jews every year are allowed to immigrate to Eretz Yisrael. So there was a person who so there was an exception made if you had been born in Eretz Yisrael and then you lived abroad, then you were allowed to return. So a guy asked Rabbi Yosef Chaim, I was born in Chutz Laaretz. I've lived my whole life there. I want to come to Eretz Yisrael. Can I write on my papers falsely that I was born in Eretz Yisrael so that they'll let me in besides the quota? He tells him, yes, based on our Gemara over here. Whether you were born in Yerushalayim or whether Mitzapri Leroysa, you're considered a child of Yerushalayim.
Because
he wanted to go. Amar Abaya, v'chad minayu, yeah. Amar Abaya, v'chad minayu odif ketrei minan. One person, one Eretz Yisraelic person is as great as two of us from Chutz Laaretz. One person of Eretz Yisrael is as great as two people from Chutz Laaretz. Amar Rava, on the other hand, v'chad minan, as how about if one person from Bavel, kisolik l'hasam, if he goes up to Eretz Yisrael, odif ketrei minayu, then he becomes as great as two people from Eretz Yisrael. Meaning, in other words, he becomes basically four times, so even greater than. So why is that? A number of different mafarshim talk about different reasons for it. One is among them are we know that the Bnei Bavel used to learn Torah much more in depth. That's the famous thing. Machshakim Oshivani is to Talmud Shul Bavel. So when a person goes from Bavel, where he has that in depth learning, to Eretz Yisrael, where you have the advantage of Avuda, to Eretz Yisrael Machim, that the heir of Eretz Yisrael makes you wise, so you have a double advantage. Yeah, there's also the idea that I think the Ritva says, also the Haflah brings that it's derech b'makom shabali tshuva in the main tzaddik gemurim, the chayim lamoid, a person who lived in Chutz Laaretz and now has the schus of coming to Eretz Yisrael, now is al derech like a bal tshuva. Therefore, they're even higher than the people who've been in Eretz Yisrael all this time.
Why? So, somebody from Eretz Yisrael
to Chutz La'aretz, so then we don't say that he's double. No. No. Chad Minayu, one person from Eretz Yisrael, Adif Ketrei Minan. It says, great, when he's in Eretz Yisrael, the pastures, as two of us, maybe the Rebbe, even when he comes to Babel, okay, because he still has the advantage that he was in Eretz Yisrael and grew up on Averet Eretz Yisrael Machkin. The Ben Yoyada, by the way, says a vart. If we see from this, therefore, that a person who started out in Chutz La'aretz and then comes to Eretz Yisrael is four times as great as he was before, because he has the double advantage of Eretz Yisrael and the double advantage of having originally been in Chutz La'aretz. This is why when Moshe Rabbeinu begs to go into Eretz Yisrael, he says, Evra nav eretz aretz atova. Evra ayin aleph beis reish hey is osius arba. He's asking, I want to be four times as great as I am now. Abra, because he was born in Chutz La'aretz. Ebra means let me pass over. But we can also rearrange the letter with Arba. He's born in Chutz La'aretz. He's going to come into Eretz Yisrael, so he's going to be. So we're saying if a person from Babel goes to Eretz Yisrael, then it becomes as great as two people from Eretz Yisrael. And the people of Eretz Yisrael themselves are double the people of Chutz La'aretz who never went to Eretz Yisrael. So there's your four, two times two.
When are we going?
And how do we?
I didn't see it. And when we went from Israel to back, then it says another.
It's too bad. I looked in Rabbi Zelikson's Machiach. He didn't have anything on this. Otherwise, I would have come out of it. I'll just look it up. Okay. Anyway, no. Okay.
When are we going? When is the
fucking cheer
going to
take us? I don't know. Nope. Okay. Dehar Rabbi Yumi. And how do we see this? Because we see the case of Rabbi Yumi. To have a hachal, I have a yadim ay tamir rabbanon. When he lived here in Babel, he didn't know what the rabbanon were saying. And we actually find cases of the famous questions of Rabbi Zera in many places. In Shas, including like the cases where even there was one time when he asked a question that was so odd that they threw him out of the Mesmedrash. But when he was in Babel, he didn't know what's going on. He saw the Klahasim, and later on, Rabbi Yumiya moved to Eretz Yisrael. Korivon, Bavloy Tipshoy. He speaks of us, the Bnei Babel, as the foolish Babliyim. So we see that he became even greater from moving to Eretz Yisrael than he was staying in Babel. Mishnah says, if she had mumin when she was still in her father's house, meaning after the kedushin but before the nisuin, so then the father would be the one to bring a raya, that these mumin developed after the erusin, and therefore that the husband's field has been flooded, which is an expression meaning it's his tough luck. Because in other words, right now, as the Gemara is going to talk about, the assumption would be that if she has these mumim now, we would presume that she had them before also, or we might have reason to presume. So the father is the one that would have to bring the raya the other way around, otherwise she may lose her ksuba. Nichnasa l'rishus abal, what happens once she enters the husband's rishus, meaning that the nisuin took place, and the husband is trying to claim that I found mumim, therefore I should be able to divorce her without ksuba, then it's the other way around. Habal tzarech l'havi raya, shad shalan nisar sahayi bo mumim elu, then the husband would have to be the one who brings the proof that these mumim existed before the kedushin. V'hoyu mekkai mekach tos, and then that his mekach, that his acquisition, was done by mistake. Mumin that we can or can't see, we'll get to in a minute. But one thing is, obviously, we're talking about mumin that could develop afterwards. Later on Ayin Vav, the Gemara is going to talk about, for example, there's mumin like, for example, an extra finger. There's no question, obviously, she was born to that. We're talking about the kind of mumin that usually would be something that developed later in life. That's true, right? We said before, then, yeah. But we'll get back to that in the Gemara, but wait. Divir of Meir. The Chacham say, "Bamed v'rom amur b'mumim shebeseiser." When is the husband b'chlal able to make a claim about mumim? Only if they're hidden mumim. So he may only find out about them after the nisuin, when they're going to be having relations for the first time. Avu mumim shebegaloi any yachalitin. But if they're open mumim, and he b'chlal doesn't have any complaints in the first place, because we assume that he saw them to begin with. Wait, im yesh. So whether Rav Meir disagrees with that is a machlokas among the Rav Meir. V'im yesh melchatz ba'oser ir, however, if there's a bathhouse in the city, and everybody usually goes there together, af mumen shebaseser, and yachol litzin, then he can't even argue about mumen shebaseser. V'nei shu boitka b'kravosav, because then the husband can have her checked out by his relative, like you said before. He asked his sister, or mother, or whatever, when you're with her in the bathhouse, check and notice if you see anything out of the ordinary. Which the Rambam points out, the Rosh, various other Rishonim points out, that it really depends. In places, for example, where the women don't go to the bathhouse altogether, where everybody goes in private, then this idea doesn't apply.
Can you ask the Beis Din?
No, because the Beis Din has no business checking her out. But a
woman would be appointed by the Beis Din, obviously.
No. So that's the other thing. What about suppose the man doesn't have any close female relatives? Can we say, let's say, for example, okay, but he has friends who have wives. Maybe he can ask one of them to check. So there are Rishonim, I believe the Rosh says, that yes, in that case, then you should expect that he can do that. The Rambam, on the other hand, says no. The Rambam says that no, only if he has relatives. Because otherwise, first of all, a man's not going to go to his friend's wives, for example, and ask them something a personal thing like that. And number two, even whatever they tell him, he may or may not, you know, okay, maybe I can trust what they say, maybe not, or whatever. So only according to the Rambam, only if he has actual close female relatives who go with his kala to the bathhouse, then we would say that he doesn't have a claim of mumen. So the Gemara starts out
today.
Well, to what extent? I mean, you know, the women don't usually go to the bathhouse together. On the other hand, for example, I mean, women go swimming together. So I guess if we're talking about a mum on her arms or legs or something, sure, you know, you can ask your sister to check it out the next time she goes swimming. You know, the next time they go to the Littera pool. But you know, if we're talking about a mum some other part of her body, not necessarily. Okay. So Gemara says, "Taima demaisia avraya." What are we saying in the Mishnah? That only because the father brought a raya, what do we have? The first case of the Mishnah, we said, was that during the time of the Erusin, they found she has a mum. She's still living at home. So we say that we would assume that the mum existed before the Kiddushin. It's up to the father to bring a raya that it only happened after the Kiddushin. The time of the Maisiyah of raya, only, why are we saying that if the father brings a raya that it only came in, that this mum only came to be after the kiddushin, only then would we believe that.
In order to claim the
ksuba, right?
Because the husband refuses to take
it. Right. Ha loy maisi avraya, which would imply if the father cannot bring any such proof, habal meheman, then we would assume by default we believe the husband. Mani Rabbi Yeshua. Now that seems to be according to Rabbi Yeshua. Back in the first parak, we had a number of machlokas in between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer on the one hand, and Rabbi Yeshua on the other one, who said there were various cases. We have the case over there where the husband marries a wife and finds she's not a psula. The case where they know that she wasn't a psula, but she claims it was mukas eight, and he claims that it was zuros asish. We had with three or four cases over there, and in each of those cases, we had Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer say that you believe her, and Rabbi Yeshua said loy mepia anuchayin. We don't necessarily take what she says at face value. So mani Rabbi Yeshua. So far that first part of our Mishnah seems to be like Rabbi Yeshua. D'amar loy mepia anuchayin. He says you don't necessarily believe her. So therefore the same thing over here. You would assume by default that the husband's claim is the correct one, that this mum existed before the kiddushin and therefore it's mekach tos. The father, Davka, needs to bring a raya, not in order for the kiddushin to be chal and for the ksuba to be in effect. Ema sefer, but then look at the next part of the Mishnah. Nichnasa l'rishus habal, we say once she enters the husband's rishus, meaning after the nisurin, habal tzarech l'avi raya, then it's the husband that has to bring the raya. Which then it's the other way around. Taima demaisi habal raya, only if he brings a raya, does he then potter from paying the ksuba. Which implies that if he can't bring a raya, by default we believe the father that it only came into existence after the kiddushin. Asol and the Ram Gamliel. Now that part of the mission is known according to Ram Gamliel, Domin and Menes. He said in all those cases of Mukas Eitz or Psula or Nas or whatever, he said that you believe her, which is the same thing as over here, saying that by default we believe her or her father rather. Only if the husband brings a raya, then we would believe him. So what is it? Is our Mishnah according to Rabbi Gamliel or according to Rabbi Yeshua? Amar Rabbi Elazar, Tavra. So Rabbi Elazar says, yes, it's a kasha, Misha Shonazu, Lo Shonazu. Whoever taught the first part of the Mishnah is not the same one who taught the second part. Yes, they're two different Tanoim. Rashi says that Tavra means it's a kasha. Tosfos quotes from Rabbeinu Chananel that Tavra is a lashon of a shvua. Like, I swear, there's no way that this Mishnah can be shtelled down according to one Tana.
That's
a
strong argument.
Yeah.
What, I don't know what Rabbeinu Kaddish, when he established the Mishnah, if he put them in that order, that they...
Sometimes. I mean, usually we would like to assume that all parts of a Mishnah go according to the same Tana, but sometimes we have no choice but to say that not. Marabshim. English. Okay. Maram Shish brings something along the lines of that somebody wanted to claim that maybe Tavra means break, which is similar to a mum, and therefore, like he's saying, so to speak, there's a mum in the Mishnah, and then and something like that, and then the Maram Shish says that's nonsense. Yeah. Anyway. Maram Shish brings that people there were people who wanted to say something like that. Yeah. Okay. Amar Rava. Rava says no. You don't have to say it's still within the Mishnah. You could shtel it iron all according to one Tana. Loy Tamer of Yeshua, Loy Ozo Basa Chazaka Zrufa Klal. Let's go back a minute to that Machloikas from Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. You have a couple of different considerations over there. One is that a woman is born a Basula. So when you find that she's not a Basula now, there was a Chazaka to begin with that she was a Basula. Now you're trying to break down that Chazaka based on what you find right now. Basically, you could say that that's one angle on the argument between Yom Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. Do you say that once you find her now not a Basula, that you assume that in the indefinite past also she wasn't a Basula, which would mean even before the Kedushin? Or is it, no, you found her now a Basula, but you know she was born a Basula, so you should assume she has a Cheska Saguf, she has a Chazaka of having been a Basula until you find that she's not, which would be Yom Gamliel's position. So Rava is saying, don't think that that's what Rabbi Yeshua is saying. Don't think that Rabbi Yeshua does not completely ignore the Chazaka de Gufa. Ella, Kila, also Rabbi Yeshua, Basa Chazaka de Gufa, Hechadeka Chazaka de Mamoina. Because Rabbi Yeshua says, in the cases from the first parak, it's different. On the one hand, she has a Cheskas Aguf, she was born a Basula, and therefore we should assume she was a Basula until the latest possible moment. On the other hand, there's Chazaka of the money. The husband is the one who's muchzik in the money of the ksuba. So therefore, we should assume that. So therefore, that's an opposing chazaka. So therefore, Rambam Gamliel says, Rabbi Yeshua says the chazaka that he has the money that hamotzi mechaver elavaraya overrides the cheskas aguf. Aval hecha the leka chazaka de mamoina. But when there's no chazaka of money, also Rabbi Yeshua basa chazaka de gufa. Then Rabbi Yeshua would agree that you go according to the cheskas aguf. So that applies to our case over here then. In the second case of the Mishnah, when Nichnas al Rishus Abal, who's muchzik right now in the money? The husband. Therefore, other things being equal, we should assume that the husband is he has the chazaka of the money, she has a chazkas aguf that she didn't have a mum up until this point. So therefore, that's reason enough to say that to say that he would have to bring a proof in order to, yeah. How do we know that Rabbi Yeshua goes points Chazaka de Gufa? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, appropriate to this week's Harsha. In Baheres Kodim L'Seyo Lavan Tomei, if the Baheres, the Tzara'a spot, comes before the white hair, then the person is Tomei. In Seyo Lavan Kodim L'Baheres, but if there's white hair before the Tzara'a ever developed, then Tahar. Sufik Tomei. What if the Sufik, which one came first? Then the person is Tomei. Rabbi Yeshua, I'm a Keha. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua says Keha. My Keha, what does that mean? Amar Rabba Keha v'tahar. It means that just like as the Pasuk says, Keha means that it darkened, just like the Pasuk says that if the Tzara'a spot darkened, there's four shades, there's four shades of white that are considered Tzara'a. But if it became darker, if it's duller than any of those four, then the person is Tahar. Rabbi Yeshua is saying, it's just like a Tzara'a spot that faded. In other words, therefore the person is Tahar. Tosfos in a couple of other places in Shas that are referenced in Maseret Shas Rashi himself gives a second explanation from Moshe Atarshan that the word is not keha with a kaf, but kiha with a kuf. Kiha maloshen hakei eschino from the Haggadah. Like when a person's teeth are on edge, like nobody's listening to me, something like that. Rabbi Yeshua is saying that I disagree with all of you. I don't understand why you don't want to follow my opinion. Really, the guy should be Tahar. That's the Kiha Tahar. Tosfos and a couple of other places brings a different possibility that kihah means like he analyzed it really carefully and came to the conclusion that it's tahor. This is, by the way, also the famous story. Tosfos references it briefly over here, the famous story with Rabba, where as his neshama was leaving, they were having a machlokas in conflicting the mesivta to the rakia about exactly this case, beheres or seyolavan, if there's a suffix, and as Rabba is passing away, he calls out tahor, which is according to Rabbi Yeshua, which is the same as Rabbi Yeshua over here. Which, by the way, nevertheless, the halacha is like the chachamim. Why that should be so is a whole discussion among the Noisa Kalim of the Rambam. One idea is because Rabba said it, when Rabba said it was as his neshama was leaving him, he's like more in Shemayim than on earth, and total of a Shemayim. There's a whole long... So therefore we go according to the usual rules. Yachad v'rab, malach v'rabim. And the halacha, therefore, is like the chum. Anyway. So what do we see from that? We see that Rabbi Yeshua is saying, since the guy has a cheskas tara, he had saras. All of a sudden now he finds a baharis one morning. He doesn't yet have a chazaka of being tamei. Therefore, you should assume he has a cheskas aguf of being tahor. Therefore, we see that Rabbi Yeshua holds a cheskas aguf. And over there, obviously, there's no chazaka of money to oppose it. Rav Amar, Rav gives another answer. The difference is reisha kan nimtzu v'kan hayu, because when it comes to Rav was just explaining Rabbi Yeshua's shita, but really the halacha in that machlokas from Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, the halacha is like Rabbi Gamliel. So Rav would rather explain that our Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Gamliel. So therefore, how do we explain it according to Rabbi Gamliel? Because in general, we should assume that a Mishnah is a little bit of hilchza. So the difference is like this: Rav Amar, Reisha kan nimtzu v'kan hayu. Because let's look in the first part of the Mishnah. The mum is found while she's in Arusa. We should assume if we found it over here, then it means it was there from beforehand. We should assume kan nimtzu, we found it here. Kan hayu, it was probably here before also. So on the one hand, it's true she had a cheskas aguf, which is that she was born without this mum. On the other hand, the fact that now we found that mum, that weakens that chazaka. So now there's not such a strong chazaka anymore. Sefer nami kan nimtzu v'kan hayu. Whereas in the sefer, where we only found the mum after she's married, same idea. We would say the mum was found here when she's in the husband's rishus. We should assume it developed in the husband's rishus. We shouldn't assume that it goes all the way back to before the kiddushin. So that's the difference. That's why in the Reisha, the father is the one that has to bring the Raya, and in the Sefer, it's the husband that has to bring the Raya. But the whole thing could be according to Rav Gamliel. Esva Abaya, Nichnas Elushus Habal, the Mishnah had said that once she enters the husband's Rishus, Habal Tzarech Lavi Raya Shad Shalai Tesara Tzayibu Mumenelim, the husband has to bring proof that before the Erusin she had these women, V'hoi Mechchen Chastos, which implies, Ad Shalai Tesara Tzayin, Mishit Tesara Tzayin. What kind of raya are we saying the husband has to bring? He has to be able to prove that the mum existed before the erusin. But if he brings proof that it only existed after the erusin, that's not good enough. We still say he has to pay the ksuba. V'amai lema kan nimtzu v'kan hayu. According to your logic, you should say once we establish that the mum existed during the state of kedushin, then we should assume she was still in her father's rishus. Then we should assume that it developed earlier when she was in the father's rishus before the erusin. Why are you saying that? Unless the husband brings an actual raya that it existed before the erusin, then he's still on the hook. Why?
But
kan nimtzu v'kan hayu basically means when it's in the same when she's in the same reshus. When she's in the same reshus. So
they became reshus of the father, so not before
erusin. No. Wait, remember there's three stages. Before erusin, during erusin, and after misturin. We're saying that if their husband brings a raya that the mum was there before erusin while she was in stage one. If he can bring a raya to that, then fine, we believe him and take the shalei b'ksuba. Otherwise, he needs to pay the ksuba. Now, why? If he brings a raya that it happened in stage two while she was still living at home, but between the erusin and the nisuin, shouldn't we assume on the basis of kan nimtzu kan hayu that it already existed in stage one? once he established that it existed while she was in her father's uterus, then we should assume it existed while even before.
But when she was in,
that's the question.
When she was in her uterus, she was not in her father's uterus.
She is.
Even if she lives with her father.
That's still considered her father's uterus.
So what's the
Erusin means that she's also to everybody else now. It means that she's also to everybody else, except, and including her husband, actually. She's still considering her. We learned before, for example, as far as the Faras Nadarim, that the father and the husband, the Orus and the husband, together have to cancel the Nadarim. Yeah, she's still considering. We learned back in the previous parak. La Olam Hibir Shul Sahav Ad Shetikam Nis L'Chopa. Yeah.
So
the point is, Abaya's question is, once the husband is able to prove that the mum existed in stage two, then we should assume, on the basis of Kan Nimtzu, Kan Hayu, that it may have existed in stage one also. Why are you telling me, unless he can actually explicitly prove that it was there in stage one, that it's that we would make him pay the ksuba? Amalei, the reason is Mishnis Arsa, Mishnis Iklamema Chazaka, and I'm sure it's because LM came Barkai. Because you have another Chazaka that we have to consider over here. You have a Chazaka that if he's only able to prove that the mum existed after the Erusin, then you have a different Chazaka to consider. There's a Chazaka that a person doesn't drink out of a cup, meaning do Nisuin with a woman, LM came Barkai, unless he checks it out first. No, we're talking about after Nisuin that he's claiming that he finds the mum, and he's claiming that he wants to claim that it existed beforehand and therefore was a mekach tos. So we're telling him, if you're only able to prove that it existed after the Nisuin, after the Erusin, before the Nisuin, then already we should say we have a different chazaka to consider. And we're going to say in a second why we shouldn't apply that chazaka more broadly. Wait. So far, in other words, we have the following. We have a chazaka, there's a cheskas aguf. On the other hand, against cheskas aguf, you have kan nimtzu v'kan hayu. Rashi and Tosfos, by the way, argue on the issue, is kan nimtzu v'kan hayu a separate chazaka, or is it just something that weakens the cheskas aguf? And Tosfos has a long discussion of it on the next Amud. Second of all, now we have this chazaka that Eidonim Shoysev Akos Elim Ken Boitoi. And then we have Cheskas Mammon, and we're going to talk about there's yet another Chazaka that comes into the mix also. This whole sugya, by the way, gets rather complicated once you get into all the Rishonim and Achronim on it. There's a lot that we could talk about it, except we don't really have the time. But yeah. Okay, so there's a Chazaka that a person doesn't drink out of a cup, meaning Dunisuin, unless he checks out the situation thoroughly. Therefore, the Hayu Rabban Ifai Su. Therefore, we should assume that he saw the moon and accepted it. So he shouldn't now all of a sudden be able to claim that I don't know about it. Question is, Hachi Amshalei Desaris Nami. By that logic, if he finds that the mum existed before the Erusin also, we should assume once the Nisuin was done, he already knew about it. Ella, no, because I'm reading Chazaka, because we have yet another Chazaka. Chazaka Einot Mephias B'mumim. There is a Chazaka that a regular person is not Mephias. He does not accept that his wife should have a mum.
Therefore?
Elam Mishnis Arsa. So only if the mum developed after the Erusin. Mishum de'ikat tarti chazaka. So then you have two chazakas. Number one, Hamana Gufa Chazkasa. She has a Cheskas Aguf that she was born without the mum. Because again, we're not talking about a congenital mum. We're talking about something that developed afterwards. And the chazaka in Mishayis Bekais Elam Kain Boitoi. There's a chazaka that a person doesn't drink out of a cup unless he checked it out. The Hai Rav Nifayasu. Which therefore we would assume that he was Mephias, that he accepted it. On the other hand, opposing that, you're trying to put the chazaka that a person does not accept mumin. Well, okay, have a chodim makam tarti. Fine, you have one chazaka against two. But chodim makam tarti lo yamrinan. One chazaka doesn't have any strength in the face of two of them. So therefore, we leave the money. Therefore, hamid mamon achas gase. We leave the money in its chazaka. And Tosfos talks about over here why we don't say that you have the two chazakas over here. You have, because again, according to Tosfos' understanding, Kan Nimtzu of Kan Hayu is yet another chazaka, so then you have two against two. On the other hand, Ad Shalot Tisaris, but let's consider now the other case. If he finds evidence that the mum existed before the Erusin, then you have as follows. Now you can't say that she has a cheskas aguf because you know for a fact that the cheskas aguf is canceled by the fact that we have edim now that this mum existed before the kedushin, before the Erusin. What? So you're going to say there's a chazaka that a person doesn't drink out of a cup unless he checks it out? The chazaka, in other words, that once the nisurin are done, that he knew about the woman, therefore, b'hai rov and ifayisu, that, therefore, he must have seen it and accepted it. Adraba, then you have opposing that. Chazaka, ain't not a mifayis woman, b'hamad mamanachas kasei. Therefore, now it's the other way around. You have two chazaka, not two chazakas against one, rather. You don't have a cheskas agruf anymore. The cheskas agruf is out of the picture. All you have is one chazaka against one chazaka, the chazaka of Einan M'shoyis B'Kos versus the chazaka of Einan M'fayis B'Mumin. Therefore, that second chazaka cancels out the first one. And therefore, again, Haman Mamanachas Kasa, you put the money in its chazaka, the husband is the one who's muchzik in the money because he hasn't paid out the ksuba yet, and therefore you assume that he doesn't have to pay it. So that explains then how we can say, how had the two parts of the Mishnah, Rava is saying, how we can understand, therefore, the Mishnah, in other words, the Machlokas in the Mishnah has nothing directly to do with the Machlokas of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. Given that the halacha is of Rabbi Gamliel, let's say then Rabbi Gamliel is talking about, Rabbi Gamliel is dealing over there with cases. With cases, there's no of a case, etc. We're not dealing with any of that. We're dealing with cheskas aguf versus that now we find she's not a sola. And therefore it's different than our cases over here. Which, by the way, there's machloek the Rashi and Tosfos, whether are we talking about over here, when we the machloek the Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, is it specifically in a case, and we discussed this in the first parak, when the argument is Bari versus Shema, she says, for example, I know for a fact that I was a mukaseitz, and he's saying maybe you were drusasish, or whatever, the various other cases we had over there, or are we talking about Shema v'Shema, which is also relevant over here, because over here he's claiming that I have evidence that the mum existed beforehand. She's claiming I have evidence that it only happened afterwards, bari or bari, or it could even be Shema v'Shema, that each of them is saying, or it could be that he's Shema and she's bari, whatever. Okay, another answer, Ravashi Yama. The difference is like this. Forget about the different overlapping chazakas that we're talking about. We have a different consideration over here. Who exactly is the claimant? Reisha monal abba b'yadcha. The Reisha of our Mishnah is talking about the girl is still a Ktana or a Naira, so she's still under her father's rishus. Who is the one who stands to collect her ksuba? The father. So therefore, it's the equivalent of Reuven claiming to Shimon, you owe my father a mona. Which therefore, forget about cheskas aguf. The cheskas aguf applies when you yourself are claiming something, not when you're claiming on behalf of somebody else, like your father. The seifa monali biyadcha, whereas the seifa is, she's claiming, that she's already out of the father's rishus, because she's already a married woman, she's claiming that you owe me a mona. So then yes, the cheskas aguf comes into the picture.
After she's married?
After she's married, yeah. Then after she's married, the father doesn't have the right to collect the ksuba anymore. The ksuba, if it's going to be paid, goes directly to her. So therefore, yes, that's where the cheskas aguf comes into play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What? Don't have
either,
so yes,
cheskas aguf.
Right.
Yeah. Esve rabacha breder of Ivyel Ravashi. Our Mishnah had said, murder of mayor, not our Mishnah, it's a Brice actually, murder of mayor, but mumun al ru'in lovi imam beisavia. Rab Meir does agree, even though he had argued in the Mishnah about the two parts of the Mishnah that we were talking about all this time are according to the mayor. So we have the case where the mumin were discovered while she's in Arusa versus after she's in Asua. Rab Meir agrees, but mumin haru'in loving imam beisaviyah, with mumin that are capable of coming from her father's house, shala avla haridaya, then in that case the father has to bring her daya. At this point, we're assuming that, at this point, the Gemara is in the question, Rav Acha is assuming that mumin ru'i and lava yimim b'saviyah means basically almost any kind of mum. It could have happened while it was in her father's house. So, v'amai, monali b'yodchahu. Why? In that case, you still have that it's a case of that she's claiming you owe me a mona, you owe me the ksuba. Why should the father have to bring her daya just because this is a mum that could have happened while she was still living at home? The answer is hachav mayaskin and v'yiseres. No, when we say v'yom mumin haru'i and lava yim v'yisaviyah, we mean a mum that definitively came from her father's house. Namely, for example, she has an extra finger. Obviously, she was born with it. So then there's no cheskas aguf to talk about. Then obviously, then obviously the husband has a very strong case. The question is, in that case, v'yiseres may raya maysi. Well, in that case, what kind of raya is going to be brought against it? The answer is raya, the rov and ifayisu. The raya that the father might bring in that case is that the husband before that the husband knew about the extra finger and accepted it and was Makadisher and went ahead with the Nisuin anyway. So then, right, but the point is, in other words, so then in that case, Rav Meir would agree because obviously there's no Cheskas Aguf in that case. There's only, and the only chazaka that we can talk about, we have on the one hand, chazaka that ain't on a mshoyse b'kos versus chazaka ain't on a mafayis b'mumin. We would assume that the facts are on the husband's side unless the father can bring a raya that the husband knew about it. But with any other mum that could have developed later in life, that's when you'd have the machlokes or Meir and the chachamim.
Why did we need this case at the end?
It's not so obvious. We're saying over here that there is a case. Rav Meir would agree that basically that's what we're saying. Given according to Rav Ashi's answer, that it's not a question of cheskas aguf or not. It's a question of who's owed the money. That the question of who's owed the money, we still do bring cheskas aguf into the picture. In a case where cheskas aguf is not relevant because she was born with it. Then you have to look at who's making the claim, she or her father. Okay. Now the Gemara is going to bring a case that turns out to be relevant to our Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Hamachlis Parah B'Chamor. If one person exchanges, if one person owns a cow, the other one owns a donkey, and they exchange them. Umashach Bala Chamor is a Parah. The one who previously owned the donkey does Meshicha on the cow. And before the owner of the cow had a chance to do Meshicha on the donkey died. The owner of the donkey has to bring a proof that the donkey was alive at the time when he did Meshicha on the cow. This line over here, Amachlis Parah B'Chamor, there's a number of places in Chassidus, and notably in a number of Maimarim of the Friedrich Rebbe that talk about the deeper meaning of Amachlis Parah B'Chamor and Avoida. One of the ideas being that a parah is an animal that on the one hand works hard, it pulls plows or whatever. On the other hand, it can go wild sometimes. As an ox goes wild. A chamor is also an animal that works hard. It's a tomidic animal though. But on the other hand, it's a cold animal. Chamor which Kufas Tamas Kirale, so it represents a coldness in Yonit Kedusha. So there's the idea: a person switches out their avoida from a para type of avoida to a chamor type of avoida. So in one place there's one mimer where the mitzvah that ever talks about it sort of in negative terms, like the person switched their avoida inappropriately. So they're not doing the avoida the Eved should put them in the world for, but a different kind of avoida. Nevertheless, the person still deserves some kind of schar. Right. It's mainly in connection with Hamach with part of a chamor, and the case is the part out of baby, and you don't know whether it was before or after the chalifin. But I'm just mentioning over here because of the basic Hamachlis Parah B'Chamor, yeah. The Rebbe talks about it in one of his Maimarim more on a positive, in a positive way, like the person has now taken on a new kind of Avoida above and beyond his original Avoida, and therefore he gets the profit from it. This has a bit of a footnote as being a bit of a watershed in the history of Lubavitch. There was a magazine that was published every month during the war years from Tavshin Aleph to Tavshin Hey called Akriya Vakdusha. In a couple of the early issues of it, the editor over there, a fellow named Aaron Levitt, he wrote under the pen name Yud Segal, wrote a couple of articles over there about under the Friedrich Rebbe directed him to write a couple of articles about Limud HaTorah according to Derech Chassidus. In one of them, he wrote. He took various things from Maimarim and Sifas of the Rebbe Rashab and the Friedrich Rebbe, and he wrote out a line over there that basically, if a person is learning this Gemara, like the Hamachlis Parah B'Chamor, just on a simple level, they're not really getting much out of it Beruchnius. When do you get something out of it Beruchnius? When you learn it in a Chassidish Oifen. There were various Rashi Yeshiva at that time, Shlomo Hyman from Tertav Adas and a number of others who read this and went absolutely ballistic. They did not like that at all, and it became a huge big thing. The Friedrich Rebbe actually wrote a letter afterwards to this Aaron Levitt, telling him basically, you know, you had the right idea over there, but you didn't put it in the right language. You put it in a way that sounds like, you know, chas v'sholem, that you should say that learning. Gemara, that learning nigla on the pshat level is worth nothing. I don't know, look at what Tanya says, that you learn that the Torah is neslavish and devarim gashmiyim, and yeah, it says chachmas the tenor shalakas brochu. That's neslavish and devarim gashmiyim. So the Friedrich Rebbe told him he has to publish a correction. I'm not sure if he actually did publish a correction, but even if he did, whatever, it didn't help much. Those who wanted to argue still continued arguing, and unfortunately that became one of the fact that to this very day, 70 years later, there's a certain rift between much of the Jewish world and Lubavitch. To a certain extent, it dates back to that. It dates back to that whole episode, because of that article. There were people there who took the view based on that. It sounds like the Babich doesn't hold much of Gemara learning, which is false. But that's how they understood it.
That created a
major rift in the Jewish world at that time. Anyway, Vitana Tuna Kala, and then so this is Shmuel that said this din about a machlis part of a chamar. And our Mishnah teaches something similar about a kala. Question is, hey kala, which case of a kala in our Mishnah is relevant to this? Ilei makala b'vesafiyah. Is it the case of a kala when she's still living at home, where we said that the father has to, that the husband would have to be the one to, where we said that the father is the one who has to bring the raya, that the mum existed before the kiddushin? Mi dummy, how could you compare it? In that case, if the father is able to bring a raya that the mum existed before the kiddushin, he will be able to take out money from the husband. He'll be able to collect on the ksubah. In the case that Shmuel just mentioned, if the baal hamor can bring proof that the cow was dead before if he's able to bring proof that the chamur was still alive at the time of the chalifin, then he'll be able to make him. He'll be able to keep the parah that now he has in his possession. It's a different kind of thing. Amar Rababa, no, kala b'beis chamia. The relevance of our Mishnah to this case of a machlis part of a chamur is the second case where the kala is in her father-in-law's house, meaning after the nisuin, where then we said the husband is the one who has to bring the raya. Right, still not the same thing. In that case, if the husband brings a raya, then it destroys the chazaka of the father. We said before, the father has the chazkas aguf on his side. The husband brings a raya and destroys that chazaka. In this case, if the baal chamor brings proof that the chamor was alive at the time of the chalifin, then he'll keep his chazaka. It preserves his chazaka, not overrides it. Because usually the kala would live. Usually the chassan and kala would live by the in-laws for a while, an edim of kest. So the normal expression after Yisurin is kala beis chamia. Usually we had that the other day also. Tomorrow, I guess we'll continue tomorrow. Beis Hashem. Yeah.